Topic number 2. As recently as 2 months ago, the Bolsheviks here in America had big plans for this, the month of May. By now, they were planning for tensions in the Middle East to be at the breaking point, with events building fast toward war. There was to be an atmosphere of crisis over our own supplies of Middle East oil. And with that as an excuse, they were planning to begin the process of closing down American freedoms. The Bolshevik ad hoc gang of four, Brzezinski, Blumenthal, Brown, and Schlesinger, were expecting their power to start growing fast in this atmosphere of crisis. Meanwhile, the big oil companies of the now headless Rockefeller cartel have been playing right into the hands of the Bolsheviks. Overnight, they have trumped up a gasoline shortage that does not exist, and they are lying about their costs and pushing up prices out of sheer greed. They are creating an artificial crisis atmosphere to set the stage for events to come. Until a few weeks ago, the tensions in the Middle East were building up as planned. Egypt was calling Saudi Arabia names, saying Saudi Arabia had paid the other Arabs to isolate Egypt. Israel was continuing its hard line toward the Palestinians. There was talk of a growing rift between Saudi Arabia and the United States. And all the while, gas lines were growing longer here in the United States. But in recent weeks, something has happened. The news in the United States has been full of trivia, for the most part, as if world events were in suspended animation. The reason is that while events have been taking place with blinding speed, they have been behind the scenes. The intelligence war now going on is intense, and the situation is changing daily. Bolshevik strategies have been badly jolted by the Russians using their robotoids. And as a result, the Bolsheviks are not sure what propaganda line to feed to the public right now. A major shock to the Bolsheviks in recent days has been their loss of the ad hoc gang of four. First, I can now report that Brzezinski was with the Bolshevik double for the late Vice President Mondale last month on April 20. They were aboard Air Force 2, which crashed in the North Atlantic, as I reported last month. Then on May 13, the other three were eliminated, Blumenthal, Brown, and Schlesinger. All four were promptly replaced with Russian robotoids, as has been done with the Carters and the Mondales. A number of other top officials have also been removed and replaced by Russian robotoids. Last month, Secretary of State Cyrus Vance was replaced. And on the 1st of May, May Day, the American Association of Newspaper Editors were treated to speeches, supposedly by Vance and Brzezinski. In the past, Vance and Brzezinski have always been noted for being at loggerheads on every issue. But this time, as they spoke of the need for a new diplomacy by America, it was as if they were both thinking with the same mind. Many observers were surprised, but no one suspected the truth. As there began to be more and more Russian robotoids in key positions of the United States government, there will be more and more surprises. One key public personality I would urge you to watch very carefully now is Walter Cronkite in his television broadcast on CBS Evening News. During this month of May, he left on what was said to be a vacation. Today, May 28, he resumed broadcasting. If you are accustomed to watching the Cronkite news program, I suggest that you watch carefully now. Look for a change in the slant given the news. It will be subtle, but it will be there. If you are serious about it, you might tape the shows every evening for a week, then play them all back one after another sometime the following weekend. That way you can compress a week into 2 hours or so, not counting commercials, and better tell what the drift is. Otherwise, the most important single personality to watch is the one labeled Jimmy Carter. Periodically, there will be small changes in his appearance and behavior as one robotoid wears out and is replaced by another. And by listening to the Carter Robotoids, you can get some hints about what the Kremlin is up to. The invasion of the Russian Robotoids goes far beyond the mere removal of troublesome people from official positions. The Robotoids assume the identity and authority of those whom they replace. As a result, they can carry out official acts, give orders, and sign agreements. A prime example is to take place next month in Vienna, Austria, on June 15th. To the world, it will appear that the United States and the person of President Carter will be signing the SALT II Treaty with Russia and the person of President Brezhnev. But the signatories will actually be a robotoid that looks like Carter and a human double who looks like Brezhnev. Over a year ago, in Audio Letter 33, I reported the January 1978 death of the real Brezhnev and his replacement with Brezhnev No. 2. So the SALT II Treaty will actually involve Russia signing with itself through puppet personalities. For over a year and a half following the Battle of the Harvest Moon in September 1977, the United States stalled off SALT II. But now it is the era of Russian robotoids, and now SALT II is about to be signed. In recent weeks, Russian robotoids masquerading as American officials have been busy not only here in the United States, but abroad as well. They have been used to carry out diplomatic shuttle negotiations in the Middle East. The Russians are trying to keep the lid on there, so the Bolshevik first strike plan, which I revealed in Audio Letter 37, cannot be carried out. The shuttles have been taking place by means of a small fleet of second-generation Cosmospheres. These are a more advanced version of the floating electrogravitic weapon platforms, which first appeared operationally over the United States in December 1977. The new second-generation Cosmospheres are designed specifically as high-speed transports. Unlike the first-generation machines, they do not use rocket thrusters to move horizontally. Instead, the electromagnetic fields around the Earth are tapped for that purpose. They normally climb to a height of 100 miles or more above the Earth to get beyond the bulk of the Earth's atmosphere. Then they travel to any desired destination, typically at around 9,000 miles per hour. That is about half the speed of a satellite in orbit, so passengers feel somewhat lighter than normal, but not weightless. When the occasion calls for it, though, the Cosmosphere transports can go even faster. To make a trip from Washington, D.C. to some far distant part of the globe, the passenger first travels to Bangor International Airport in Maine. From there, another plane takes him to a Cosmosphere landing site in east-central Quebec Province, Canada. This site, which was first mentioned in Audio Letter 31, is on the north edge of Manicouagan Lake. If the destination is in Russia, be it Moscow or Novosibirsk, the Cosmosphere can land usually within a few tens of miles of the final destination. For other destinations, however, secluded landing sites like the one in Quebec are used to maintain secrecy. The earliest Russian robotoid to appear on the American scene was one simulating the late David Rockefeller. That robotoid replaced a Bolshevik double for Rockefeller by early March. On April 25, this robotoid, David Rockefeller No. 2, left the Russian embassy in Washington and headed for Jerusalem. The following day, he met with high Israeli officials, pressuring them to back off from the plan to destroy Saudi Arabia's oil fields. The Israelis were astonished. The plan had been in gestation for over 4 years and was a joint plan between Israel and America. Now, here was one of David Rockefeller's doubles telling them that Russia knows about the plan and does not plan to let it succeed. The Israelis resisted. Rockefeller No. 2 left Jerusalem for Moscow, where he met with John Paisley shortly after noon. Paisley is a former high CIA official whose body was supposed to have been found October 1, 1978, floating in Chesapeake Bay. He has been described in various news reports as a mole, quote unquote, within the CIA, a foreign agent. That he was, and an extremely important one. It was Paisley who provided Russia with the orbital data on America's spy satellites. With that data, Russia's fleet of man-killer satellites, the Cosmos Interceptors, finished destroying America's spy satellites in orbit over a year ago. Since his disappearance last fall, Paisley has been living near Leningrad, following a vacation at Odessa on the Black Sea. Rockefeller No. 2 briefed intelligence officials in Moscow about his discussions with Israelis. Paisley had been brought there because it was anticipated that his services would shortly be needed. This was confirmed by the report of the Robotoid. It was decided that Paisley should go to Jerusalem the following day, April 27, but accompanied by an agent of the KGB, since the Russians did not entirely trust Paisley. The Rockefeller Robotoid was to return to Jerusalem that day also and put in an appearance along with Paisley. In addition, it was decided that Jimmy Carter No. 2 should visit Jerusalem in a quick secret trip by Cosmosphere transport. David Rockefeller No. 2 was then dispatched to Washington with instructions for Jimmy Carter No. 2. By the evening of April 26, Carter No. 2 was at the Israeli intelligence station outside Jerusalem. At the same time, Carter No. 3 was keeping up appearances here. Rockefeller No. 2 was seen at the World Trade Center in New York, but left that night for Moscow and then Jerusalem. While Jimmy Carter No. 3 was appearing at the Holocaust ceremony in Washington, Carter No. 2 was in Moscow, having already been to Jerusalem. Meanwhile, Paisley and Rockefeller No. 2 were in Jerusalem. Paisley's testimony was being used to convince the Israelis of the extent to which America's military security has been breached. Carter No. 2 likewise was there to prove that Bolshevik support for the Middle East war plan was being removed as a factor in Washington. Late on the 27th of April, Rockefeller No. 2 began encountering questions and problems which he was not programmed to handle. So, obeying standing instructions for such an event, he departed from Moscow for further programming. On the 28th, he went to the Russian embassy in Washington. That night, he returned to Jerusalem. For further impact on the Israelis, the Carter No. 3 Robotoid had been dispatched to Jerusalem, along with Rosalind No. 2. Paisley had remained in Jerusalem all 3 days. Meanwhile, here in the United States, Carter No. 2 and another new Robotoid, Rosalind No. 3, were on duty. On April 29, Paisley left for Leningrad, and the Robotoids left for Washington. The first Robotoid shuttle to the Middle East was ended after 5 days in total secrecy. As April was ending and May was getting underway, the main focus of activity by the Russian Robotoids was here in Washington. On April 30, a Carter Robotoid surprised everyone with an uncharacteristic response to critical statements by Senator Ted Kennedy. He said, "That is just a lot of baloney." That just wasn't like Carter, people said. The next day, the Brzezinski advanced Robotoids had their turn to surprise everyone. That was the day they abandoned their usual fisticuffs in favor of sweetly humming the same tune to newspaper editors. "Just not like those two to behave that way," said some puzzled observers. 2 days later, on May 3rd, it was suddenly announced that a top official of the State Department, Leslie Gelb, was resigning. 2 days after that, on May the 5th, another important resignation was announced, and this one had a short fuse. Only a few days earlier, on April 26, Air Force Secretary John Stetson had said some important things in public. Without divulging any secrets, he almost let the cat out of the bag about America's recent military reverses. Speaking of our ability to verify the proposed new SALT II treaty, he said in effect that he wasn't worried about that. To him, the real story was something far different, that is, the possibility of secret development and sudden deployment of new weapons by Russia. That, my friends, is exactly what Russia has been doing now for nearly 3 years. Underwater missiles, charged particle beam weapons, killer satellites, cosmospheres, and the moon bases, and now organic robotoids. All were developed secretly and then deployed suddenly, and not one of them is touched upon in the SALT II treaty. Speaking as he did, Stetson was not long for the Pentagon. His resignation was announced May 5 and was effective on May 18, 10 days ago. His resignation was an echo in some ways of that of the Undersecretary of Defense Stanley Reeser in March. And the trend towards transfers of key personnel, shakeups, and resignations is continuing. Within a few days, one of the men in a position to observe Carter most closely will be transferred out and replaced with someone new. That's the President's naval attaché, the man who carries the so-called black bag for nuclear war. On May 16, it was reported that 7 aides to National Security Chief Brzezinski are quitting, and so it goes. On May 7, Pravda praised the United States for having finally become sober-minded about SALT II. 2 days later, it was announced that the United States had reached an agreement in principle with Russia for a SALT II treaty. But in still another strange twist that raised many eyebrows, the announcement was not made by President Carter. Instead, it was made by Secretaries Brown and Vance. But then, one Robotoid is as good as another. Carter Robotoids began lobbying on Capitol Hill immediately for the treaty, one Robotoid at a time, of course. But shortly, the emphasis began shifting again to the Middle East. On May 13, Paisley arrived in Iran from Russia. After checking with intelligence agents in Tehran and Abadan, he returned to Moscow before the day was out. News reports on May 16 said that Defense Secretary Harold Brown was going to Brussels to drum up support for SALT II among our NATO allies. But a Harold Brown Robotoid was in Moscow on May 13 and 14 and arrived in Tehran on the 15th. The next day he went to Jerusalem, where he joined Paisley in the No. 2 Jimmy and Rosalind Carter Robotoids. Thus began the second Middle East Cosmosphere shuttle involving Robotoids. After intensive meetings with Israeli leaders, Paisley left for Leningrad. The rest of the group went to Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, where they were joined by David Rockefeller, No. 2. After giving assurances of support to Saudi leaders, they went next to Tehran to analyze the situation there. Meanwhile, things were turbulent in the Middle East. The cabinet of Lebanon resigned. President Sadat suddenly announced that Egypt is ready to pursue friendship with Russia. And gold prices started rising fast, thanks to heavy buying from the Middle East. The next day, May 17, the shuttle group were back in Riyadh, then back to Jerusalem, then to Cairo, all in the same day. Suddenly, on that day, May 17, Israeli Defense Minister Weissman withdrew from the West Bank Negotiating Commission. Foreign Minister Moshe Dayan did likewise. Both were angry with the continuing Begin hard line, denying the possibility of Palestinian statehood. The next day, Begin suddenly adopted a more conciliatory line, offering to meet with Jordan's King Hussein and saying, "We recognize the Arab nation." Can you imagine? On May 18, the shuttle broke up, ending with brief trips by Harold Brown No. 2 to Damascus and Tehran. For the moment, the lid seemed to be on the pressure cooker. But 2 days later, Iran blasted the United States for the Senate resolution condemning the executions there. The United States was told to delay sending the new ambassador, and Senator Jacob Javits of New York, sponsor of the resolution, was denounced as a criminal. Javits was promptly put under 24-hour police guard. At the same time, it was announced that Secretary of State Vance was to leave right away on a 2-week trip overseas. Reportedly, Vance was to be going first to London and several other points, but the real destination of the current Vance Robotoid, No. 3, was Tehran. As I explained last summer in Audio Letter 37, Iran is an indispensable key to the Bolshevik plan for a nuclear first strike against Russia. The Bolsheviks, as they see their power slipping, are making a feverish attempt to go ahead with the first strike plan. The Vance Robotoid was sent to Iran to gather information and to seek ways to foil the first strike plan. He arrived early, May 22nd, in Tehran, but less than 36 hours later, the Vance Robotoid was killed, shot in the head. It was less than 36 hours later that another Vance Robotoid arrived in Tehran, Cyrus Vance, No. 4, but that one lasted only a few hours before being gunned down on the morning of May 25th. The Russians are now very worried about the situation in Iran. They are also concerned that the pressures and inducements they have brought to bear in the case of Israel and her neighbor still may not prevent double cross and war there. That is true even though both Sadat and Begin have secretly been eliminated during the past month and replaced with Robotoid doubles. My friends, besides the Middle East, there is one other imminent trouble spot for Russia right now, and that's Poland. In Audio Letter 42, I revealed the Bolshevik plans for a Pope's revolution to erupt during the actor Pope's visit to Poland. Originally, the visit was scheduled for this month, May, but was delayed until next month instead. And very early this month, the actor Pope, the Bolshevik double for the late Pope John Paul II, was eliminated, along with his Bolshevik boss, Cardinal Benelli. Both have been replaced by doubles from Russia, but the evidence is not yet clear as to whether these doubles are human or robotoid. Having accomplished this Vatican coup d'etat, the Russian and Polish leaders believe they will be able to prevent the assassination of the Pope from taking place next month. That is why, early this month, Poland suddenly reversed her earlier plans to levy stiff charges against journalists who entered Poland to cover the Pope's visit. It is a calculated risk. But the Russians feel that the publicity surrounding the Pope will be beneficial if the Bolshevik assassination plan can be thwarted. Topic number 3. For centuries, Russia has endured war after war and invasion after invasion. Every time the Russians have somehow endured the worst and somehow come back again, stronger than ever. But each time, the hatred of war has sunk deeper into the Russian soul. Over 150 years ago, Tsar Alexander I of Russia proposed that a community of the Christian nations of the world be formed. There was to be no question of victors or vanquished in the wars just ended. Instead, it was to be an alliance of trust and friendship, with all parties pledging to deal with one another according to Christian principles. It was to be not a military alliance, but a new kind of alliance designed to remove the causes of warfare throughout Christendom. It was to be, as Alexander first named it, a holy alliance. The treaty creating the Holy Alliance was signed in Paris on September 26, 1815. And for a while there were signs that it might actually work. Most of the nations of war-torn Europe were eager to join the alliance, designed as it was for the prevention of war. Alexander was hoping to see the Holy Alliance unite all of Europe, the British Isles, and America, not so much politically as in spirit. The beliefs and policies of Alexander I were derived from the influence of a Christian sect in Russia, the same one that now has taken control of Russia. Prior to their recent resurgence, the days of Alexander I had been their heyday. But those days were also the heyday of mushroom and Rothschild power in Britain and Europe. And while Alexander I wanted to unite the Christian nations to prevent war, the Rothschilds wanted the exact opposite. Their objective was to divide nations one against the other, and to become richer and richer by financing armaments and warfare. Through diplomatic maneuvering and economic pressures, the Rothschilds succeeded in dismantling the Holy Alliance. The events taking place around us today are far different in detail from those of a century and a half ago, but they are cut from the same historical cloth. Increasingly, the main protagonists in the Western arena are the same as they were then. On one side are the atheistic Bolsheviks and the Rothschild sponsors who destroyed the Holy Alliance long ago. And on the other side is a Russian Christian sect which greatly influenced Tsar Alexander I and which now rules Russia. For many people, it is still hard to shake the image of Russia that was true in the days of Stalin. And in Russia, as elsewhere, things do not change overnight, but they are changing, and for the better. For example, consider the matter of taking Bibles into Russia. I quote now from an article titled, "We Praise God," published last month, April 1979, in the Record of the American Bible Society. The trip was less than 3,000 miles, but it took 65 years. As the heavily laden lorry lumbered from the loading dock at the Bible printing plant of the German Bible Societies in Stuttgart, the first leg of the journey began. Actual driving time was only 6 days. I would have been faster had the roads been in better condition. However, it was close to Christmas and Moscow was already well into winter. But the last time such a large shipment of Bibles had reached Moscow with the full approval of the government was 66 years ago in 1913. In October 1978, the Soviet government granted an import permit to the All-Union Council of Evangelical Christians, Baptists, in the Soviet Union for 25,000 Russian Bibles and 5,000 concordances. As soon as the order was received, the United Bible Societies in Stuttgart stopped all other production so that the presses could be devoted exclusively to the printing of these Russian scriptures. By early December, they were ready and on their way by truck through the German Democratic Republic and Poland and into Russia. The Bibles cleared customs on January 22, 1979, and before the end of the month, more than 60% of them had been distributed to churches. They are already in the hands of Christians in places as far apart as Kiev in the Ukraine and Novosibirsk on the northern edge of Siberia, as well as in Moscow and throughout the Baltic area. Unquote. My friends, throughout the old Christian areas of Russia, the words of Jesus Christ are being heard once again. Churches long in disuse are being refurbished, often at government expense, and reopened. And the most hopeful sign is that in Russia, it is the young who are most eager to hear and learn about our Lord Jesus Christ. Whether the Russians will succeed in their grand design for a modern holy alliance remains to be seen. Perhaps it all depends upon whether we, the Christians of the world, will continue to allow ourselves to be divided and pitted against each other, or whether we will at last unite in trust and brotherhood. Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.